This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob.
As we flip the calendar from January to February, we welcome you into Talking.Golf, Rob Hernandez, alongside Gary D'Amato. Gary, we're 1 month closer to whenever the golf season might start. Maybe that's what we should start with today on our podcast. We should pick a date that we think the golf season will come to Wisconsin and then stay.
You mean no 12-inch snowfall after the opening day? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. The thing that's exciting about February, Gary, is we usually do at least one good thaw where, you know, maybe courses south of the Dells might, you know, open for a day or two. But you're right. It would have to be get open, stay open. That's the caveat.
You know, I'm going to go early this year, Rob, because, you know, it's been a really mild winter by all measurements, not a ton of snow. And January was way warmer than normal. I think it was among the top 7 or 8 warmest Januaries on record. So I'm going to say this keeps up, and we're playing golf in the second week of March this year. That's what I'm going to say.
Second week of March. So we'll go, what, March 12th? Would that be good?
Yeah. So let's say March 12th. That's as good a date as any.
That's yours. I'm going to go March 20th. So a week later, I'm going to give it another week. And for the record, Gary, this is like ground day. We don't need to see any shadows, Gary. We just need to go with what our gut says. And, and our gut says it's we're not going to, none of this April and May snow stuff. It's going to get good, and it's going to stay good. That's what I'm saying.
And the qualifiers, that does not include, you know, Whistling Straits, Erin Hills, the top tier courses in the state, which traditionally have much later opening dates. So we're talking public golf, you know, at least in the southern half of the state. I say most of the golf courses are open by March 12th. So that's my qualifier.
And I'm not saying Evergreen Country Club in Elkhorn where the flagstick stay in year round, even when the snow's
right
on the green either. I'm
that's
saying,
right.
I'm saying, let's say like a Brown Deer Park and, that kind
yeah
of thing.
But,
I mean,
exactly.
my goodness, it's my weather.com tells me that it's in the Madison area right now. It's in the low 40s. So you're not that far away from what we are. I think we're stretching to hit the 60 today. So, it's out here in California. So I think I like your optimism, Gary. We'll go with that. I tell you, if you had a chance over the weekend to watch golf in a warm weather spot, the Waste Management Phoenix Open was a place to start. Gary, we're going to talk a lot here on our podcast today about the Ryder Cup and kind of forecasting, playing, kind of putting ourselves in Steve Stricker's role as the U.S. captain as to who the pieces of the puzzle might be that he has to work with and who he might have to select. But first, I was riveted, you know, before we had a great Super Bowl last night, another playoff that's 4 in the last 6 tournaments on the PGA Tour, and Webb Simpson got the best of Tony Finau. And I don't know, Gary, nothing against Webb Simpson, but I am a huge Tony Finau fan, and my heart broke for him after he was unable to get a birdie down the stretch to fend off Webb Simpson, who wound up between the last 2 holes of regulation and the playoff hole birdie 3 holes in a row.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rob. A lot of people, Tony seems to be a great guy, and a lot of people think that he has so far, underperformed a little bit given his immense talent. He hasn't won nearly as many times on the PGA Tour as a lot of people thought he would have by now, but he's been close a number of times, including obviously this past week. So, you know, I here's another prediction. When Tony does break out and wins one or two, I think he's going to win a bunch. So, yeah, one of the biggest hitters in golf. Great guy, good short game, and he of the famous dislocated ankle at the Masters.
The famous dislocated ankle, and then they even brought it up again yesterday. And Gary, I know you've written about this multiple times, but his roots at the Greater Milwaukee Open as a 17-year-old going through Monday qualifying is something that will always be a part of Tony Finau's history in the game of golf.
Yeah, it would be. That's where he made his PGA Tour debut. He had turned professional as a teen. And lit it up at, I believe the qualifier was at Fire Ridge, which was, I think, still then called Country Club of Wisconsin. I might be wrong. It could have been Fire Ridge.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, he lit it up there and came to Brown Deer Park as sort of a wide-eyed, you know, kid, barely out of high school. And immediately earned all the eyes on the range were riveted to him as he was bombing his driver over the fence down there at the Brown Deer Range. I remember Kenny Perry was really impressed, but he said, "Yeah, we'll see if the kid can putt." Well, obviously he can putt. He's made a pretty good living so far. So yeah, that was a memorable week at Old Brown Deer Park.
It was kind of fun watching Tony Finau over the weekend. They did a great job at the Waste Management Phoenix Open of honoring the memory of Kobe Bryant with a lot of tributes there on the famous 16th hole. They painted his numbers 8 and 24 in the ground yesterday, and then put the hole location 24 paces in from the front and 8 from the left side. And it proved to be a pretty good hole location too. There weren't a whole lot of brushes with holes in one there yesterday, but that was kind of cool. And of course, Tony Finau wore Kobe Bryant's jersey all 4 days when he played that hole. At least two or maybe three of the 4 days he birdied the hole, and then just came up about a rotation or two shy. And it turns out, of course, that's the difference. Would have, if he had made the birdie putt on 16 on Sunday, he would have avoided the playoff. But it kind of segues into our Ryder Cup talk. I mentioned last week Brant Snedeker being kind of an Ian Poulter type character on the U.S. side. Webb Simpson is another guy who just won't go away, will he, Gary?
No, totally unflappable. The guy, he's one of those guys that who doesn't look like he has a pulse when he's playing. You don't know if he's shooting 76 or 66 by his mannerisms and gestures and expressions on the course, but really, really a solid player. You know, he had some putting problems earlier in his career, but obviously has solved those, and he'd be a very, very strong addition to the team. I think he's played really great golf for more than a year and a half, 2 years now.
Well, he just seemed to make everything down the stretch, and you're right. You know, he kind of reminds me a little bit of a modern-day Andy North, and, yeah. And you know, guys won a major title and is just, you know, just always around. And again, as you look at now, we updated the Ryder Cup point standings on our website. If you go to Wisconsin.golf and on our pull down of tournaments, of golf, then you just go to the Ryder Cup page under men's professional golf, and it vaulted him. It's under news and features actually on our website, 2020 Ryder Cup, but it vaulted him high up onto the point standings, and I believe it vaulted him from 7th to 3rd, and he's right behind Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson. So, you know, go figure, a guy like Webb Simpson, who's had a tremendous run. I think this is 4th top 10 in a row, and he is, I think at this point, Gary, he'll be hard to knock off. I think those top four, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Webb Simpson, and Xander Schauffele are going to be hard to dislodge as we talk about the you know, the automatic selections for the Ryder Cup team. And that's a pretty good top four.
It really is. You've got power. You've got great putting. You've got Xander Schauffele, who's an ascending young star. Yeah, I think you're right. I think Koepka, I could say, with his point total right now, appears to be, I would say he's a shoe-in. And I would say, you know, Dustin Johnson probably is too. And then I think the next probably three players for sure down to Gary Woodland are, I think, strong bets. And then we get to Tiger Woods at number 6. Interesting, Rob. What do you think? Is he on the team or not this year?
Well, I think he's going to play enough where he'll point his way onto the team. And I think he'll play well enough in majors where he'll point his way on the team. So the hard part is, will he adjust his schedule if mathematically he sees himself slipping? Because I don't think he wants to put Steve Stricker in the situation that he's got to make Tiger one of his captain's picks. And we'll talk captain's picks here in a minute. I think he's, you know, he's going to have a good major championship season. He's going to have to, you know, continue to play well when he plays. He won't play again now until the Genesis Invitational next week is the tournament that he hosts at Riviera Country Club. So we'll see. I think it'll be, you know, based on him taking himself out of the lineup for a couple rounds at the President's Cup. I still don't think that Tiger Woods physically is the kind of guy that's going to pound himself more than the minimum 15 tournaments a year. And you're going to have to perform then to make that team. So we will see how that fares. But I think he makes the team. I think he makes it on points, and I don't think that'll be an issue. I wanted to ask you about a guy that you just mentioned, though, Gary Woodland. You know, Gary, the reigning U.S. Open champion, fell two spots to number five after the Phoenix Open. I love Gary Woodland as a person, as a player. I just, you know, out of the guys in the top eight right now, and the ones to go down further than Tiger Woods, Tony Finau moved from eight to seven. Justin Thomas, even though I thought he played pretty well for a couple rounds at Phoenix, fell from six to eight. Gary Woodland's the one that I wonder if he's going to be able to, hold it together in the top eight, and B, if he doesn't, Gary, what does he bring to the table that would make him a prime candidate to be a captain's pick? And do you think Steve Stricker burns a pick on him?
Yeah, those are all good questions, Rob. I think you're right. Gary Woodland is not quite as consistent as the top, you know, six, eight, nine guys on the list here. He's probably the least consistent of those. But, you know, he proved himself in a cauldron of pressure by winning the U.S. Open. And what he would bring would be length, which the U.S. has prized in recent Ryder Cups. There's been a lot of talk about how long all the U.S. players are. But, you know, that really hasn't done them much good when you look at the results. I don't think it's totally about length at the Ryder Cup. It always helps. But it's, as we've seen, Rob, it's much more about putting. And I think Gary Woodland is more of a streaky putter maybe than the top four, five, or six guys on that list. So, you know, he's in a good place right now. Is he going to be in a good place in August? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. But, you know, I look a little bit farther down the list, Rob, and I see Justin Thomas at number eight, and I don't think there's anyone who thinks that Justin Thomas is not going to play his way onto the team or not going to be a member of that team on points. There's no doubt he's going to be there. So even though he's eight right now and he's on sort of the bubble points-wise, I think we can all assume he's going to move up that list and be safely on the team.
Well, in the mathematics of it all, Gary, show you how fickle things are at this time of year. Webb Simpson and Tony Finau finished 1-2 at Phoenix, and Justin Thomas finished in a tie for third place, and he loses two spots on the Ryder Cup points list. So that tells you, you know, a guy like Webb Simpson, who is, you know, kind of trailing a little bit, you know, you win an event out there, you're going to get enough Ryder Cup points to be to move up dramatically and significantly, especially if you're inside the top 25. So I tell you what, no one's played better than Justin Thomas here to start the season. So it's kind of an anomaly that he would mathematically fall two spots, but there are now 700 points difference between Justin Thomas at number eight and number nine, Kevin Kisner, who leads that, you know, best of the rest that you were talking about. Let me run through some names, Gary, and we'll talk about, you know, potential guys currently outside the top eight. And we'll talk about if the Ryder Cup ended today, who would be your four final selections if you're Steve Stricker? We've got Kevin Kisner at number nine, Patrick Cantlay at number 10, Matt Kuchar at 11, Patrick Reed 12, Andrew Landry 13, Ricky Fowler 14, and then a guy who had a great week last week, finished T3 with Justin Thomas, was Bubba Watson. And then falling from 15 to 16 with Brant Snedeker, who we talked about last week, and then falling from 16 to 17 was Jordan Spieth. There's a lot of guys in that 14 to 17 range there, Gary, that I would use as my picks. But let's start with you. If you had four to use, who would you pick outside of the top eight right now if we had to play the Ryder Cup today at Whistling Straits?
Yeah, boy, if we had to play today. Well, I know Stricker loves Kisner, and Kisner is ninth in the points. So I think that'd be a no-brainer, you know, kind of a bulldog. Stricker loves his attitude. And I think there's probably no doubt that if the points concluded the way they are today, he'd be on the team. Patrick Cantlay. I would pick Patrick Cantlay, and not just because he's 10th in the points, because he's played great for about a year now, or over more than a year even. And I think he would bring a lot to the team. Matt Kuchar at number 11. You've got the experience there. I'd probably go with 9, 10, and 11. Rob, right now in the points, Kisner, Cantlay, and Kuchar. Then you come to Patrick Reed, number 12. Really interesting. He's, you know, in order for Steve to pick him, he's going to have to move up to, I think, 9 or 10 at the very worst in points. I don't think Steve would pick him if he was 11 or 12. As much as Patrick Reed has contributed to the Ryder Cup, he has also detracted from it. And we could go into ad nauseum about Patrick Reed. But I think he would put Steve in a tough spot being if he was, you know, 12, 13, 14 in the points. And I think my guess is Steve would bypass him, but I could be wrong. Ricky Fowler, 14, Rob? I don't know. Ricky is he's beloved by all the guys on the team. Great player, but, you know, he hasn't won as much as we'd like him to have won at this point. He's 14th in the points. Jordan Spieth, unless he discovers his game, forget it. sorry, Jordan.
Captain D'Amato here. Holy cow.
And then one more name I'll mention, Rob, and he's way down, number 31, but he moved up nine spots in the points, and that's J.B. Holmes. Yeah. I like J.B. a lot, and he's got a well-rounded game with a lot of power, and, you know, a slow player who might put some Europeans off if they're paired with him by his slow play. But I think he's the one that bears watching who's farther down on the points list. So now I'll turn it back to you, Rob. Who do you like?
Well, J.B. Holmes is one that I had to, you know, search and comb through the rankings to find.
Yeah.
And which kind of surprised me because he's theoretically played pretty well of late. He played, as we mentioned a week ago, two rounds at the Farmers Insurance Open with Steve Stricker, the captain, and acquitted himself quite well, kind of opened Steve's eyes to the potential that J.B. Holmes would bring to a Ryder Cup team, especially at Whistling Straits, where there, you know, theoretically will not be a lot of rough, and it's a bomber's paradise, but there's some other things you got to do well to really, you know, say that you can play that course well. J.B. Holmes at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, Gary, goes 64, 65, and then 70, 75. So yeah. His weekends have not been very good. And kind of the same yesterday with Xander Schauffele, a final round 74. You know, they weren't really lighting it up by any means. Webb Simpson shot 2 under and Tony Finau shot a 70. But low scores were out there to be had. So that again speaks to the dilemma that Steve Stricker has. You've got these guys who are continually in contention, but then, you know, what do they do on Sunday? If you know, J.B. Holmes is a guy. If you're Steve Stricker, you're looking at Sunday performance and saying, you know, when am I going to see J.B. Holmes have a really good Sunday? And because, you know, and how does that translate to the Ryder Cup, Gary, is the question. And because, you know, especially on a Sunday singles thing where it's all you against one guy, you know, is that does J.B. Holmes give you enough on Thursday and Friday? I'm sorry, Friday and Saturday to make him, you know, worth the risk on Sunday if, in fact, you know, he doesn't have someone else to bail him out of a tough situation. I think that's the big question with J.B.
I agree, Rob. I agree with you there. You know, and all 3 days of competition at the Ryder Cup are like Sundays of a major championship, basically, as far as pressure and the amount of scrutiny on every little move you make. So you're right. He needs to play better on Sundays. He's moved up in the points, but he's not near high enough to be considered a captain's pick at this point. But a lot of season left, so we'll see if JB can, you know, finish one or two of these tournaments off and move way up in the points. Who else do you like?
It's kind of funny here because you like the four guys right after, you know, Justin Thomas. Although I agree with you, Patrick Reed is kind of the wild card in all this. You know, again, he's given a lot of energy and a lot of passion to these international teams going back the last few years, and I think it'd be tough to pass him up. But I was looking more at that Ricky Fowler, Bubba Watson, Brant Snedeker, and Jordan Spieth grouping there. You know, I think I agree with you. Jordan Spieth is the one that I would eliminate. You know, Kistner, as I look up his record, has only, you know, had the one team experience, according to what I'm seeing on the internet. So this may be wrong, but the 2017 President's Cup. But he's got a lot of game, and but I like Fowler because, you know, he craves that spotlight. Like you said, he's a popular guy in the room. The thing is that we continue to change the dynamic of that room, though, and you know, with a Patrick Reed, you know, a lot of his you know, guys that he's been paired with, you know, are coming in and off or on and off of these teams. Another guy who we haven't talked about, Phil Mickelson, excuse me, who's played quite well with a lot of these guys and is a great presence. I wonder if he becomes a factor. He just hasn't played well enough. Now he's going to defend this week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This is the one, Gary, I think, as you look at the Ryder Cup and Phil Mickelson's place in it, I think if we don't see good results out of Phil Mickelson this week, I think the Ryder Cup is a stretch. And I think going back to the story I wrote off of his appearance at the American Express, I really wonder if he can compete on the PGA Tour to the level that he believes he can.
Yeah, those are good questions. He's 42nd in the points, way down the list, behind guys like Chesson Hadley and JT Poston. I think he's going to have to move into the top 12. I think to be a captain's pick, reaching the top 8 as an automatic pick, I think is a complete stretch at this point. Just because we haven't seen enough from Phil from his game to warrant him being able to move up that high. But, you know, if he can sneak up into that top 15, he's going to force Steve to at least consider him and think about him. As it's currently constituted, no, he would not be a captain's pick.
As we look at others, and we won't talk about the European team until we have a better handle. Their qualifying procedure is a lot different than the U.S., and there's two different ways you can get on the team. But, I look at some of these names, and again, the evolution of talent on the PGA Tour from the American side is pretty phenomenal. Andrew Landry, who had a great American Express and has had a great start to the West Coast Swing, is a guy that Steve Stricker has to kind of have on his radar, but not one that you say he's going to be a guy that's going to be in the mix if we were to play the Ryder Cup tomorrow. Two guys that had great Phoenix Opens, Nate Lashley and Max Hama, made significant jumps on the list. But that's this week. JB Holmes made a great move. Adam Long has had a great West Coast Swing, and he's starting to creep up there. And then you've got guys like Colin Morikawa who, continue to just kind of hover, in the room, he's at 35 now in the rankings after falling two spots over the weekend. But, that could be a guy that could break through and win a major, Gary. And if he wins a major, those points are significant. And now you look at the names that we see up the top, and if you're Steve Stricker, if a guy like Colin Morikawa were to burst out and have a breakthrough, Gary, how would you handle it if you're Steve Stricker, knowing that he is so young and this would be his first international team competition? And you might also have, Xander Schauffele doesn't have much international team competition. How would you handle that as you then would that alter your thinking about who you put on that team and who you don't?
Yeah, I think you want a really good blend of experience and youth. I don't think you want a team loaded with, 10 or 11 guys who are, on the back end of their careers, so to speak, even though they're playing well, obviously, to have made the team. And I don't think you want a team loaded with 8 guys or 9 guys in their, between the ages of 22 and 25. So I think you have to take that in consideration. I think not only will Steve have to evaluate Colin on the work he does this year and how he plays, but he's going to have to evaluate him when in the context of who else is on the team, I believe. So I think, if there's only another one or two guys who are really young and inexperienced, then I think you have no problem putting Colin Morikawa on the team if he plays his way up into that that consideration in the points. But if you've got a bunch of guys who are, 24, 25, 26 and don't have a ton of experience, guys like Patrick Cantlay in team competitions, then I think you ask Colin to make it on points. That's kind of how I would look at it.
Couple things to talk about too in relation to this, and we haven't talked about as we look at the results, the very controversial Saudi Arabia tournament that was over the weekend on the European Tour.
Yeah,
drew a lot of guys over there. Your guy Graham McDowell won that. Am I looking at this correctly?
Yeah, I was so happy to see that. Yeah, I played with Graham in the Century Tournament of Champions Pro Am a few weeks back, and he was telling me he had just changed swing coaches, and he was really happy with what the new coach was working with him on. So obviously, something has switched on. Some kind of light has switched on with Graham, and played great and beat Dustin Johnson over there in the Saudi International. And I see he moved from 92 to 22 in the European point standings. So all of a sudden, boom, he's in the conversation for the Ryder Cup team at Whistling Straits for Europe.
And I'm sure you were coaching him up when you played with him. Oh, yeah. You really wanted to see him at Whistling Straits, so you had him in on that European team.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see him there. He's a great guy and, you know, U.S. Open champion, and it'd be fun to see him there. It would be.
Well, and Phil Mickelson did finish third in that tournament, too, at 9-under. He was only three off the pace. So Phil did have a good tournament over there, which, again, makes this tournament here at Pebble Beach this week. You know, Jordan Spieth will be there. Phil Mickelson will be there. It's three different courses, the first three rounds, kind of like the American Express up in Palm Springs. And then they cut and play the big course on Sunday. Brooks Koepka also got things going over in Saudi Arabia. He finished 17th, was right there until the final round when he shot a 72. This is so interesting. And this is what's exciting, too. When I talked to Steve Stricker at the American Express and, you know, asked him, is he like a guy managing his fantasy football team where he's, you know, well, should I start this guy? Do I play this guy? You know, way too early to think about, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, he was certainly more in tune with what he was doing versus what other guys were doing. But he did have a chance to talk to Tiger Woods at San Diego. He did have a chance to talk to Ricky Fowler and some of these other guys that he saw and had opportunities to play practice rounds with. And so we'll see Steve again this week up at Pebble Beach. So he'll be able to see Phil and be able to see Jordan Spieth and some of these guys. So, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. But, boy, it sure is fun to think about who might be at Whistling Straits, isn't it, Gary?
Oh, it really is. Yeah, we can go up that list of down to 40 names and even down to 42 with Phil and go over every one of them and talk about strengths and weaknesses and will they make it? What kind of years are they going to have? That's part of the fun of this whole thing is a lead up to the team actually being finalized.
Well, fun to talk about. We'll continue to do this periodically as we come to maybe the first podcast of every month. We'll kind of update our list. But right now, we've got in the top eight, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Webb Simpson, Xander Schauffele, Gary Woodland, Tiger Woods, Tony Finau, and Justin Thomas. So Gary and I would obviously have to go with those. Then Gary D'Amato would go with, am I correct, your Kisner, Cantley, Kuchar, and maybe Reed? Or would you substitute J.B. Holmes for Patrick Reed?
Well, maybe not J.B. yet, because he's too far down the points. I wouldn't, I guess I'd go with those first three, Kisner, Cantley, and Kuchar. Right now, I would pass Patrick Reed. I think he's got to move up, in my mind, to 9 or 10 in the points.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess I'm lukewarm. I'd probably go with Ricky Fowler as my fourth, but I'm lukewarm about Ricky. I really am.
And I would go Ricky Fowler. I might go Matt Kuchar, Ricky Fowler, Bubba Watson, Brant Snedeker, and I'd be ready for Jordan Spieth to bump off Matt Kuchar. One guy we haven't talked about, Gary, and Jim Furyk hasn't played much. He's going to turn 50. He might play the Champions Tour. Are we eliminating Jim Furyk from consideration based on the fact that, you know, he's played pretty well on the regular tour in the last 12 months?
Yeah, I wouldn't eliminate Jim, but in order to be a captain's pick, for me, he's got to be 9 or at the worst 10 in the points. Okay. I wouldn't pick him at 11, 12, or 13, or certainly 19 where he is now. So he's going to have to move up. You know, if I'm captain, he would have to move up in the points and make me pick him as a pick instead of saying, well, you know, he's got a lot of experience and, you know, he's 16 in the points. And, you know, no, he's got to play his way into a better position than he is now, in my mind.
Definitely. I would agree. So there you have it. Chance to look ahead to the Ryder Cup coming this September at Whistling Straits. Some things that Gary D'Amato has been working on this week on Wisconsin.golf. We talked a little bit last week teasing your story on Sean Tulin and that story up there on Wisconsin.golf. Got some good feedback. Sean still has a lot of fans in Wisconsin, doesn't he? And he's done a lot with his ability to design putters. And there's a lot of guys in Wisconsin and that have come through that play the Tulin design. What did you think of the feedback to that story, Gary?
Yeah, it was a fun story to do. I ran into Sean at the PGA Merchandise Show and kind of saved that story to write a few days after I came home. We had a really nice chat. He took me in a little side room in a gigantic Callaway display booth there. And we sat down and talked. Rich Tock was in the room. So the three of us kind of shot the breeze a little bit. And a lot of people know Sean's story, a Madison West grad who started Zevo Golf, met Gary Adams and went to work for TaylorMade and had a long and distinguished career at TaylorMade. And then retired for all of 6 days, Rob, and then his sons talked him into starting a putter company, which was then bought by Callaway Golf, and now he's in charge of the Odyssey line of putters, which is a really good putter. He's very proud of it. And, you know, for a guy who I think he majored in maybe agriculture economics at the University of Wisconsin, not the kind of background you would picture for a guy designing, you know, drivers and putters, but he certainly has made his mark in the industry.
Well, and the neat thing about the Toulon design putters, they were named after significant places that he had been in his life. You know, like, for example, the Madison putter, I think he has a San Diego putter. And now he's kind of got to balance that, you know, approach with some of the bread and butter putters that Callaway has been involved with on its Odyssey line. And the one that you had in the story, this triple track putter looks really cool with the three lines. We've seen putters with single lines, but the three lines behind the putter really, to me, sets up nice for the eye.
Yeah, especially, Rob, when it's designed, I think, to play with the Callaway's ERC soft and chrome soft balls.
Sure.
Because if you've seen those balls, they've got the exact three lines on them. So then you line up the ball with its three lines with the two-ball putter with its three lines. And it really essentially is like, remember the old three-ball putter that was outlawed because it was longer or it was deeper than it was wide?
Right.
The USGA outlawed that putter. Well, this, in a sense, sort of gets around that rule because the actual golf ball that you're putting becomes one of the three balls. So I think it's a great alignment tool, and I think it's a great advertisement to play those Callaway golf balls too. So kudos to that design team and to Sean for coming up with that.
Now, I joked on Twitter last week that I found my I went back to yesteryear to find a putter in my bag, the old Yes putter from Jerry Cordy, is that right? Is that how I pronounce
right.
it?
Yeah, Jerry Cordy, yeah.
And you know, and I hadn't used it in a long time, and you know, I think a lot of guys in Wisconsin, you know, he gave a bunch of guys the tool to try. It looks, you know, I'm looking at this image that you have with the triple track and just, you know, the golf balls notwithstanding, the totally different concept, but you know, where that putter comes into the actual putter head is to me something that is very unique on that Yes putter. And here, you know, because you've got to have it come in at an angle behind the golf balls, that's another, you know, thing that's neat. But you know, the one thing with that Yes putter when I used it last week was the fact that it totally changed how I stand over the golf ball. I let that club kind of, you know, sit on the ground, and this shaft of this putter here on the Odyssey triple track looks like it might also come back at maybe a flatter angle. And instead of being up with your eyeballs over the golf ball, you're kind of sweeping it back and forth. And at least last week, that was a good method with that Yes putter. And it almost looks like, you know, you can use that concept to kind of bowl the golf ball along the green with this three ball. And I might next time I'm at my local pro shop, if I see this, I got to try this out, especially if they have one of those, you know, the ER soft golf balls or the chrome soft there that you can play with, because I think that would be great. I love the old three ball putter. And it was kind of sad when they made that verboten.
Yeah. Now the thing is, though, Rob, when you play around with that putter and the ball, the trick is to get everything lined up correctly. And you know, I think that might bring some slow play stuff into the equation, because guys are going to be really fidgeting with their ball to get it lined up perfectly and then set the putter down perfectly behind the ball. I think it's a great alignment aid. I just wonder if everyone starts doing that, if it's going to, you know, if it's going to make slow down play a little bit. But yeah, it's a great concept. And you know, Sean Toulon really believes in it, and they've done extensive testing with those Stroke Lab putters and the triple track putter. And you know, Sean Toulon claims that, you know, using those putters will definitely make your stroke more consistent. So he's got reams of data to prove it. So yeah, I'm gonna have to pick one up too and give it a whirl. It looks like a good putter.
Well, one piece of equipment that neither you nor I are likely to pick up anytime soon is a pickleball racket.
Yeah.
And a story that we just posted in the last couple hours from Gary D'Amato, longtime LPGA Tour great Sherry Steinhauer from Madison, still involved with the game. As far as being involved in the first tee of South Central Wisconsin's board of directors. But When she left the LPGA Tour a number of years ago, picked up a pickleball racket, and it's hard for her to set it down, to be honest with you. And Gary's story hits on that point. It's more than just a passion for Sherry Steinhauer. Pickleball is the thing in her life right now, and I think it's pretty cool that she's been able to find that passion, that outlet for competitive aggression on the pickleball court, and she's had some great success. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your conversation with Sherry Steinhauer?
Yeah, I love Sherry, Rob. I know you do too. She's just been great, for a great ambassador for golf and for the state of Wisconsin. Obviously had a wonderful career on the LPGA Tour, won 8 times, I believe, 3 Women's British Opens. But, you know, she had some hip issues, Rob. And as you know, she had hip surgery on both hips, I think in 2009, just a couple months apart. Thought that would fix her problems. She had some chronic pain, and but it didn't really fix it. Her hips get stuck, and she's not able to really make a golf swing the way she was accustomed to for 25 years. So, you know, it kind of, plus, you know, she started having a little issue with the putter, and, you know, she was getting into her late 40s, mid to late 40s, and just decided to walk away from golf because it wasn't fun anymore. I mean, when you're hurt and you can't play this, can't swing the club the way you know you can or once did, it became sort of a chore for her. And luckily, Rob, at just about the right time, she discovered pickleball, and I couldn't get her off the phone, Rob. I mean, we spent probably 45 minutes. She just is so enthused about what she's doing. She's playing every day, even at 57. And she's able to play pickleball because the movement is mostly forward and backward and laterally on the court. And there's not that torquing and twisting that you find in a golf swing. So she really loves it, Rob. And she's become, apparently, a very, very good pickleball player.
Well, exceptional, and they've got these levels. And I've learned a little bit about pickleball through some college roommates of mine that now live over outside of Phoenix. And, I mean, they're probably next in line behind Sherry Steinhauer when it comes to the ferocity of with which they're playing pickleball, and especially the volume. And I like Sherry's thing, that the joke in pickleball is one more game. Let's just play one more. And and they are very much into that. Now, one of my college roommates broke her wrist playing pickleball. She executed a shot and then went to brace herself as she was going towards the ground, and something snapped. That's the one thing when you're 55 plus and you're starting to play the game, you also have to remember that you are your age, and that's it. This is a huge thing in the Phoenix area, Gary, for the retired crowd. And it was kind of interesting because I see in your story that even Martha Nowsey, another former LPGA great from Wisconsin, the Sheboygan native, recently won a doubles tournament in Sun City, Arizona. And it is a wonderful sport. The pickleball court, not as big as a tennis court, but a lot of times played in the same areas. Sometimes they're able to, create both courts on one. And so that's kind of cool, but your space is limited. It's more or less a action reaction thing. And that's a pretty cool way to spend your days. And I can imagine it's gotta be hard to put the racket down.
Yeah. There was a stigma, I think, in recent years, that pickleball was sort of, a game you might find at, say, the Villages in Florida, played by, 75-year-old people who have a hard time playing other sports, frankly. And Sherry laughed at that and agreed and said, yeah, it has had a stigma, but that's rapidly changing as young people get into the game. And Sherry said, all my partners, pickleball, it can be played as singles, but the preferred format for most people is doubles. Yep. And Sherry said, most of my partners are men in their 20s and 30s. And she said, I tell them, you have to do the running. but she said, a lot of younger people are taking up the sport. And she said, it's very addictive. And, I mentioned to her that I might give it a whirl one of these days. And she said, well, you call me and you tell me how you like it. And she said, I'll bet you're going to call me and tell me you're addicted to it, too. So I'm not sure I'm going to pick up a pickleball paddle anytime soon. But I imagine one day I'll try it because it does look like fun, Rob.
Well, we got a trip coming up to down there to Goodyear. And I might just... normally, one of my college roommates and I will hit the golf course, especially as it gets closer to summer when it's not being, when it gets hot and there aren't many people on the course. But I might have to give this a whirl too. I just to see what the craze is. I know again, you know, a lot of the times that he plays, he has to play early in the morning, late at night, because, you know, there's so many people using the courts. They, you know, they keep, you know, converting tennis courts into pickleball courts at this retirement, you know, village where they live. And again, they can't keep up with the demand. I think it's great. I think it's, you know, you know, you're right. You think of the villages and down in Florida, the largest retirement community in the world, and you think what, shuffleboard, pinnacle, you know, cribbage, but you know, this gets people off the couch and on, you know, and out and about, and it's a great outdoor sport. You know, a couple of years ago, Vitense Golfland in Madison put in a platform tennis court, and now I wonder if they aren't kicking themselves for not converting that area into a more of a pickleball type thing. I've seen it now in a number. I'm going through our golf course database, and a number of the private clubs in Wisconsin are adding pickleball to the to their, you know, amenities. So I don't think it's I think it's just beginning to catch on for that, you know, especially for the over 40 set. But as you said, I mean, it can be played by people of all ages.
Yeah, it's you know, Sherry's only been playing for about 3 years now, and she's already a 5.0 level player, Rob, which is the highest you can achieve sort of as an amateur pickleball player. And she's good enough to play in pro events, although she says, I get my butt kicked when the few times I played against professionals. So for now, she's content, even though she has signed a contract and is with Selkirk Sport and is playing their paddle and wearing their apparel. So she's getting paid for that. But she's content right now playing at the very highest, I guess you could call it amateur level. But, sure. But she did say one thing that's so good about the sport is that there's a very quick learning curve. You become pretty good really quickly, and that's what makes it so addictive. But she said then going from like a 10 handicap in golf to scratch, that's when it gets hard. There's a lot of nuances in the game. It's a very fast reaction game. But apparently you can become pretty good at pickleball in just a couple months of playing. So I think that's one of the things that makes it so attractive to so many people.
Well, we'll keep an eye on her exploits on the pickleball court. And Gary, as we segue into our final segment here, looking at college golf, and we've got Steve Stricker playing this week up at the Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. But as far as competitive golf goes, for other Wisconsin people, I think Jerry Kelly had a nice round or a nice week last week at the Morocco Champions. But college golf is what I wanted to talk about. And the spring season actually gets going today. And for golfers with Wisconsin ties, and just down the road from me here in California, down in Vista, California, at Shadow Ridge Country Club, the Fukakura Invitational, hosted by Cal State San Marcos, a Division II tournament. And Chris Cola of Fond du Lac is currently on the golf course, just finished his morning 18. They're playing 36 today, 18 tomorrow. And he shot 74 and is four shots off the lead. Senior year at Chico State. I remember when Chris Cola announced he was going way out to Chico State to play Division II golf. I thought, boy, that's a long way to go. But he's had a great career in a great program. They're ranked in the top 40 in Division II. And Gary, the college golf season is back underway.
Boy, it's hard to believe, Rob, isn't it? It seems like we were just the fall season just concluded. It's going to be a fun spring. And one thing we wrote about in recent days was that, although it's still a few months away, the Marquette Intercollegiate at Erin Hills is going to be played about a month earlier than it normally is, Rob, this year, in early September.
Okay.
And I haven't talked to Coach Bailey, but I wonder if maybe the reason for that is tee times are going to be at a premium, you know, right before and after the Ryder Cup. So
sure.
It might have something to do with that date change. But, yeah, it's going to be fun watching watching Marquette and Wisconsin and Green Bay and a lot of local players from our state on those teams playing this spring.
And speaking of Green Bay, I talked to their coach Lee Reinke today, and they just were able to fund with the help of the grandparents of Courtney Matschke, one of the players on the women's team, and other donations from supporters of the program, basically an indoor winter facility. They're borrowing space where they have the bleachers for the natatorium at UW Green Bay. And when the bleachers are pushed in and they're not out for the spectator viewing, which is most of the time. They're able to use that space for a chipping area, a platform chipping area, a platform putting green, three hitting bays into one of the net returns, just got in today a TrackMan, and Lee said he knows a little bit about TrackMan. He's used it before, but he's getting the full-fledged demo later in the week, and then they'll be able to use that as they prepare for their spring opener in mid-March. And so kind of cool. We've seen Marquette with the indoor facility. Of course, the University of Wisconsin has a great one that we use as our media facility for the American Family Insurance Championship. And when the weather gets dicey, you want to have that option to be able to stay sharp. And, you know, Gary, the bottom line is any day you get a club in your hand, you're using that muscle memory. And I think that's what UW Green Bay is going to benefit from as far as, you know, making sure these kids, both on the men's and women's team, have the opportunity to touch a golf club between the time that they aren't able to play outside in November and then by the time they are able to tee it up. Hopefully, as you said, March 12th, we're holding you to that. Here for the start of the spring season in Wisconsin.
I hope I'm right, Rob, and I hope it's not April 12th.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. Well, Gary, I appreciate your time here on Talking.Golf, as we do every week. Never a shortage of things to talk about, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, Rob, sounds great. Thanks.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.